Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
The conversation of the nation still hangs in the balance, I suppose. We are all talking about COVID-19. I hope you had a good day yesterday. It was St. Patrick's Day. Probably the most unusual St. Patrick's Day we will ever have, and we will talk about it to our children and our grandchildren and everybody and every single generation ahead of that as well, because it is the most unusual. Patrick's Day has only ever been, well, postponed once back in 2001 for the foot and mouth, but this time, of course, it's cancelled and unlikely to be held at any future time this year. But, of course, we can all look forward to next year in St. Patrick's Day, and that's one thing that we should focus on right now. Everybody listening today, please, please focus on the fact that this time next year, no matter what happens, I can be absolutely sure of it, by this time next year, we will try and get back, and we should be back to some level of normality, and we should have our Patrick's Day parade again. It was lovely to see people around the country celebrating St. Patrick's Day and having little parades in the house and grandparents looking through windows and parades down their little street. The best one I seen, I think it was in Finglas or Cabra, I'm not too sure, where they had their own parade with St. Patrick banishing the COVID off the street. Now, as you know, last night Taoiseach Leo Varadkar addressed the nation, and I have to say, you know, I was never always a big fan of Leo. I didn't like the guy. You know, I mean, in fairness to Fine Gael, they've done a good job of bringing the country back from the brink from 2009 to this point. But sadly, or obviously, this is going to have a huge economic effect on the country. Enda, he was all right. Leo wasn't really a fan. But last night, and I think generally speaking, throughout the last 3 or 4 days in particular, and I think everybody has to just pause for a second and think that the individuals, Simon Harris, Simon Coveney, Leo Varadkar, and all those in government at the moment who are currently the sitting government at the moment, most of them are probably working 18 hours a day. And they're trying to get us through this. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to get things wrong every now and again. They're going to do things maybe that, you know, we shouldn't think they do, or maybe they're not doing something quick enough. And we all have questions to ask, and they're trying to do as many things as possible at the one time. And I think, you know, give them a bit of space. I think they're doing a good job. I just really believe they're doing a good job. And I think we should be very proud of not just our health workers. And I know he described last night our health workers as the heroes without the capes. But I also believe the heroes in this too is our leaders on this particular occasion. We can give out about the government all year round. And we do. We give out about them all the time, particularly when we had the housing crisis. But all the things that we've talked about in the past on the show, like the housing crisis and all those things, seem to pale into some level of insignificance at the moment, when they have a very difficult task ahead of them. And certainly the next few months are going to be very, very telling. And Leo Varadkar last night said, we're in the middle of a global and national emergency and pandemic, the likes of which no one has ever seen before. And he's right. And not just the pandemic, but the economic collapse globally of the world and the amount of money this is going to cost. And don't want to put money before our lives, because money should never come before our lives. But of course, we have to look at the repercussions of the economic devastation that this is bringing to people, the hardship and the poverty that could follow this as well. Give them a thought. You know, no matter what you've had to say about them in the past, I think there's one thing that we're all focused on at the moment, and that's making it better again. We want to take your calls today, by the way. If something good happened over the weekend, or should I say, well, I keep saying over the weekend, on Paddy's Day, which was yesterday, it seems like it was the weekend, please let us know. If you had a little parade in your house, I want to hear about it. If you figured out something, by the way, if you're in self-isolation, or you're isolating yourself, or you're working from home, and you're at home, like all of us, we can't go out anywhere, we're not going to restaurants, bars, pubs, whatever it is, and you've kind of figured out a way to occupy your mind and occupy your idle hands, please let us know. I heard a great one this morning about people having a pub quiz, but having it at home through Skype, with numerous couples paying a fiver each to get into it. I think that's a great idea, you know. So I think any ideas like that to keep us all a little bit occupied and take our mind off the anxiety that this is creating, let us know. And the number is 087-188-0008. And also, by the way, if you don't agree with me, as some people are not by text here, and you think the government are not doing a great job, I want to hear from you too, and I want to find out why you believe, what more you believe they could be doing for you. The first thing I want to do today is I want to speak to Paul McAuliffe, who's a Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Niall. How are you?
It's a tough time.
I'm at home with two kids, like a lot of parents, homeschooling, and already we've suspended two of the students and the teacher has resigned. So,
all right, okay.
I think we're all grappling with the new reality. I think particularly, Niall, I suppose, in the last day or two, I've noticed the calls we're receiving are from those people who've lost their job. Yeah. And I think that's that's something we never thought we'd be back to so soon. And I think it's you know, there's a lot of difficulties of people applying for social welfare queries and so on. And as you say, the system, this has been sprung on everybody.
Well,
and
I mean, Paul,
have to make sure that it responds.
It took us 9 years, roughly, to create 180,000 jobs. And it's taken us 9 days to take them back away again, which is it's devastating for the economy of the country. Now, hopefully many of those people will get their jobs back when we get through this. And that hopefully won't take too long for us all to get through this globally, not just here in Ireland. But there's loads of questions, I suppose, Paul, that people have. Now, I know the Minister, Pascal Donoghue, is meeting with the banks today in relation to mortgages, because everybody is not only worried about the COVID, and of course we're all very concerned about that, we're also concerned about the economic point of view and what happens if we lose our job. You know, what happens if my business goes bust? I'm self-employed, for example. What happens if my business goes bust? I employ five people. How does that work out? Can the government give me a few quid to keep them on? All these questions want to be answered. I know there's a million questions and a million tasks for government. How do you think they're dealing with that right now?
Well, I think, first of all, on the public health side, I think all of the expertise from the European level, like, we've got some great leaders in public health, Tony Holland, Paul Reid, all of the people who are on that side. And I think, you know, you can't criticise in any way what's been done, largely because it's been done from the public health playbook. It's exactly what needs to be done at the right times by medical advice. And I have to say, it's been done in a very competent way by those ministers who are serving us at the moment. I suppose the economic issues are very important as well, because, as you say, it took us 9 years to recover from an economic difficulty, and we don't want to make that worse, while at the same time making sure life is the most important, protecting life is the most important one. So what I imagine the government will want to do, and what ministers want to do, is to keep the system flowing, to keep us going out and buying our goods, to keep people working where they can in a safe way.
But how are we going to do that, Paul, when there's absolute and utter apprehension out there? And people are not spending money. You walk into your average shop that sells unnecessary goods, you know, your electronics, your TVs, your sofas, your even mortgages. I spoke to somebody this morning in the mortgage industry. He's a broker, and he's had three mortgages cancelled this week. Three loans that were supposed to be drawn down this week for houses cancelled, right? I mean, those unnecessary things, although you wouldn't say housing would be unnecessary, but those unnecessary things, people are not spending money. Donald Trump is introducing a stimulus package to try and encourage people to get out and spend money as they would before because of the apprehension. How do we take that apprehension out of society when we're in a state of play at the moment, according to Leo, where we don't know if it's going to last 3 weeks, 3 months? It could be next autumn. We don't know. So how do we take the apprehension out?
I think as the days develop, we will get more relaxed, and there's a worry about that, because then that will mean we'll get more relaxed about the public health measures. But where people can, and where people continue to be paid, and where people can safely go to work, that's the reason why we haven't gone into lockdown, is because that allows us in a safe way make sure that the economy ticks over while this is happening. Because we know what happens when an economy collapses, and we know how long it takes to come back. And we also know that there are big questions out there waiting to be answered on housing and health that needed to be answered 9 days ago, and they still will need to be answered when all of this is over, with a bigger bill. So that's why everybody going about their economic life as much as they can is important. But there are people who just can't do that. So there will be shops that don't have customers, and that will close, and those employees will be out of work.
And what are we going to do about that? Because Boris Johnson has already said that he's making available £25,000 grants for small business, not loans, because that'll put them under pressure to have to pay it back again, but grants for small business of £25,000 that they can draw down to keep their business open. What are we doing for small business at the moment?
Well, I think there's a range of measures, and I suppose we probably have put the public health side first before the economic side, whereas I think in the UK they've done that the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
But I think certainly the very low threshold that we're placing for the emergency COVID-19 six-week payment for unemployment, it's not near what people will be getting in their normal work. But the fact that people can apply for that, and hopefully that will be processed really quickly and get back out to people. And I understand that that's also going to be available to parents who can't go to work during this period as well, and who lose money as well. So that payment is available, and that will be an injection into the economy. If people can still keep getting money, then they will be able to spend food in the shops, and they'll be able to keep those shops open.
And how are you working, Paul, with the enemy, so to speak? The Confidence and Supply Agreement, of course, still kind of stands as a sitting government. But how are Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael working? I'm assuming everybody is leaving politics aside when it comes to this particular matter.
Well, in many ways, I suppose it's deeply frustrating as a TD. The job often as a public representative, whether you're a councillor, TD, or senator, Lord Mayor, whatever you are, your job often is to try and explain to people what's going on in the system, and secondly, to spot the gaps that arise as they come and complain about different things. You go, actually, there's something wrong here in the system, and it needs to change. And I suppose for the last number of weeks, with the Dáil not sitting, we haven't been able to do that. There's a huge amount of work on the table now of most public representatives at all levels, explaining all of these new criteria and working with people. A lot of people aren't online now. A lot of people aren't online. They rely on media like radio and television and newspapers. And, you know, even the basic things like getting the form printed out for that emergency payment. You know, I've had bundles of forms left in the letterbox of my constituency office, so that people can drop down and take those
and
forms.
And to remind people, you can do that by free post, by the way. You don't have to do it online. You can pick up the form and do it by free post, because a lot of people, particularly older people, are not online. Yeah.
So supporting, like, an old man rang me this morning saying he was afraid to leave his house to collect his pension. And I said, actually, on post, have a special arrangement to open from Friday at 8 a.m. in the morning to allow older people do that before other customers arrive later on in the day. He thought he had to stay in the house and he couldn't leave. And I was explaining, no, you can go for a walk, keep your social distance. So that's the job of a public rep. I
understand that older people are afraid to leave the house. And in the UK, they've asked them to stay indoors for 4 months, or to cocoon, as we're calling it over here. And I think that's what they want to do, because although you're saying it's grand to go down to the post office and collect your money and keep your social distance, they're still afraid they might bump into somebody they know. There is that fear, particularly for older
people. I think cocooning will come. The Taoiseach alluded to that last night. Cocooning will come in Ireland, and that will involve the community. I already see places like the Fingus First Responders, community groups in our area getting out and supporting older people. But you're right in saying that we also need a government. Like Minister Regina Doherty has been very busy explaining and putting in place all of these issues, but she currently isn't elected, and there are other ministers in that scenario. And we can't have that go on for an indeterminate period of time. The first time I've spoken to Dáil was in the days after the first case, when the school in my constituency was closed, and at the time we weren't speaking about where it was. And I said we needed to treat this like a war. Now, other people said that I was being alarmist, but that is the way it has panned out.
Well, that's the quote I heard this morning on the radio in America. It's called, they're classing it as wartime economics.
Yeah, and war economics means that every resource of the state is dedicated to that battle. And that's what's happening now. And if you look in a very unprecedented way, we're opening up funding to projects that in peacetime you wouldn't normally do. But to do that, and to do that for a sustained period of time with a government that isn't elected and, more importantly, doesn't have a majority. So, for example, legislation that will be passed tomorrow in the Dáil will need a majority to pass it. Now, there are special powers that are being granted to the state. Will all parties give the government those special powers? Because in the past, special powers have been a very controversial thing. So there's going to be these things that arise on different issues where there'd be political differences. So we need a government, absolutely. We need a government with a strong mandate. And more importantly, Niall, when all this is over,
going to be a recovery period, of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we need a good government there, a strong government there.
We're still going to have all those issues that we had 9 days ago, housing and health and homelessness. But the problem is, we're going to have less resources to do it.
Okay, but this is the point that I want to raise to you in relation to the resources, right? Everybody is in the same boat. Every country, I mean, is in the same boat at the moment. Okay, there's different, one or two countries are taking different approaches. Like, I believe the Dutch, by the way, are taking the same approach as the British, which is, let's all just catch us and see what happens, which is probably not the best approach to be taken. We've taken the strategy that has been employed by most countries in the world, which is the kind of lockdown strategy or self-isolation strategy and social distance strategy, right? Which is to try and, as they say, the term, I'm sure people are sick listening to it, flatten the curve. But the backbone of this country is the small business. And I am going to talk to the director of the small business or the Small Firms Association in a second. But they are the backbone of this country. Without them, we have nothing. There is the big industry, of course, as well, which has to be protected. But they can swallow up a lot of the losses on this. They can absorb a lot of the losses. The small businesses can't. And I haven't really seen that being addressed so much. I heard the revenue come out last week and saying, oh, well, look, you don't have to pay penalties and fines if you're late paying. That's no good to a small business. He doesn't have the money for his VAT bill, you know, next month when it comes in. And you take, I'm sorry to go on about it, but you, from a selfish point of view, the media, you spoke about how important the media is. And Leo Varadkar mentioned last night, journalists and media giving people information, which is vital. I can tell you now, the independent sector of radio will not be here in 4 months' time if they don't get some sort of package or stimulus package. And as we talk at the moment, the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland give out a grant every year. That grant, by the way, is 15 million to small directors and producers who wanted to make little films or whatever it happens to be, to go out on radio or TV. That should be suspended. That money given out to the independent sector. So we could be all as safe as RTE, who are over there thinking everything is grand for us. Should we get funded by the state anyway? So the independent sector are absolutely terrified. They've lost probably 40% of their advertising in the last 2 weeks.
And you know, Lyle, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head, because this is going to affect the whole spectrum. So if, for example, we release huge amounts of state resources and we give that out, then ultimately towards the end of the year and next year, we will end up having to make cuts in services, which will result in job losses at that end.
I know, but the rules have to go out the window, Paul.
Absolutely, the rules do. And that's why the message from the last general election basically is, lads, the rule book isn't working, we want to tear it up, has to be heard by whoever forms a government.
We can print money, and you know the economics of this as much as I do. In the past, when things have gone wrong, we can literally print money. And what they normally do in these situations is they print money and they give it to the banks. The banks then lend it out, okay? And that's how it works, right? But what Trump is doing at the moment, what Boris is doing at the moment, is feck the banks. Let's just skip the banks, print the money and give it to the businesses. Give it to businesses who need it so we can survive this economically. Because as much as we do, and we've been talking constantly, and we will talk more today about the lives that are at stake and public health that's at stake, that's really important. But what's really important is when we recover from this, that people are still in jobs and people can move forward and their lives are not destroyed. So, for example, on a selfish point again, if we don't start to say, talk to the Broadcasting Authority and say, listen, we need to release this 15 million that you keep every year and suspend this particular grant programme for 1 year and give it to independent sector, particularly local radio stations around Ireland who give local information and are vital, vital in this country. And if we don't give them money, I'm telling you, Paul, we will not be, you won't be talking to me in 2 months' time.
No. And I think the graveness of the economic crisis here probably hasn't hit us yet, because I can imagine you can insert the word airline industry or tourism industry in exactly the same sentence. And that's why at the moment it's about us pulling together. It's about supporting the ministers who have a job to do. But as times go on, there's going to be political decisions that are made, political decisions that are based on economics and different views of how economics works, people who believe in one way of doing things and another. And we can't suspend politics forever, because politics is about making choices. So there will be differences between my party and Fine Gael, or Fine Gael and Sinn Féin, or whoever forms the next government. And it has to be okay at some point to start talking about them again, because that's what makes a difference in people's lives. That's why people are so annoyed with the system at the moment, why they feel like they were locked out, because they didn't have a fair crack of the whip. In a tighter economic time, they're going to feel that even more. So at the moment, it's about a national war effort. But at some point, we're going to start having to rebuild. And at that point, we need a strong government, but B, we need to make sure that government responds to people.
All right, well, listen, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate you coming on the air, Paul, and well said. Listen, Paul McAuliffe is a Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West. Also on the line, I want to speak to Sven Spollen-Barron, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name properly, who's from the director of the Small Firms Association. Good afternoon to you, Sven.
Niall, good afternoon, and thank you for having me on. And I have to compliment you, first of all, on your pronunciation of my name, which is a mouthful, unfortunately.
it's not that bad. I guess I've got through worse. Okay, but Sven, I mean, you guys must be very concerned at the moment, as we are, as a small independent business as well. We're an independent radio. I mean, you must be very worried about small business at the moment, which are basically the backbone of this country.
Yes, we are indeed. So this is a crisis, obviously, of biblical proportions, and we don't need to try and find words to describe it. This is real a catastrophe for small business owners. As you rightly said earlier, there's 267,000 small businesses in this country, and they employ currently, as of 2 weeks ago, half of the private sector workforce. And our main service to our members as the Small Firms Association is help them with HR advice and help them to really keep their doors open. And you can see from the queries we're getting, we're literally getting hundreds of phone calls every day. Questions are now around layoffs, are now around short-term, depending on the sector you're in, also about social distancing. If you're a small manufacturer and you want to keep your doors open, how can you actually achieve that? And then lots of questions, obviously, what are the government supports available at the moment?
So let's get to that, okay? Because there's a lot of people in small business. Some of those, by the way, are just self-employed people who are sole traders, plumbers and electricians, etc., etc. And some are businesses who employ maybe anything from two people up to maybe 100 people or so, right? So they're all listening today and they want to know, I'm in trouble now. I'm in real trouble. My business has dropped by 40 or 50% and the government are going to be looking for their money at the end of the month, or VAT that I have to pay them. I know the revenue have already said they will do away with penalties and fines, but they still have to pay the tax. Now, I know in other countries, the governments have said you don't have to pay it. You're grand. Hang on to it. We'll waiver that for the moment. We'll come back to you on that next year. What are the government doing currently at the moment? Is there any packages there? Is there any money they can draw down? Is there any waivers on tax? Is there anything at all in the pipeline?
Let's talk about three different areas, and I'll talk about the most important area at the moment. It's the people that small businesses employ, or if they're self-employed, looking after themselves. And obviously, if you're in a situation like a small retailer or a business in the tourism industry, you probably have to put people on short time, or you have to temporarily lay off people. And there's a new scheme called the COVID-19 Job Seekers Emergency Payment. And that would allow employers to pay their employees for a certain period of time if they are laid off €203 a week. So this, the idea is to do this through the employer so that employees don't have to go through the process, the lengthy process themselves. There's talks at the moment how employers can claim this back, but this is one area. Obviously,
so is that the suggestion that the employer can claim this money for his employee to keep the employee on? And so, is the employer allowed to then, you know, throw a few quid on top of that to keep his wages the same, or is that it?
So no, this is just for as a short term. This is designed as a short term measure
for 6 weeks.
For 6 weeks. So the second thing, obviously, that is there is around if you have an employee that has to go into self isolation, and there's this €300 something payment a week for the time that the employee is in self isolation. So that's there at the moment as well.
And that's once that employee, of course, is certified by the HSE to be requested to go to self-isolation.
You're really well informed. The third area is then what revenue does at the moment. And you mentioned earlier that revenue is not going to come after you and chase you for penalties and these kinds of things. But the revenue currently also offering phased repayments. So this is as it stands as of today. So you can apply through the revenue website that you...
But Sven, you could always do that. You could always, if you were struggling, you know, as a business, you could always ring them up and say, listen, I don't have the money. Can I do a phased repayment over the next year, depending on the amount of money it was, and provided you didn't owe them a lot of money already? But to a lot of small businesses, that's not good enough. They're saying, well, look, this is unprecedented times. This is uncharted territory. This is somewhere we've never been before. And the revenue need to maybe pull back a little bit. We're hoping to try and get a spokesperson from the revenue on. Because in other countries, what they're saying is, you don't have to pay it. Listen, we'll waiver it. We'll help you through this. Surely that's what we should be doing for small business.
So what you just said, so obviously I'm the biggest advocate for small business. I'm the biggest advocate when it comes to government supports and what actually needs to be done. Your initial question was, what can small businesses do at the moment? And this revenue facility is there if they want to delay payments, if they don't have the €30,000 to pay or €3,000 to pay their VAT bill next week. So that's important for them to know that that's out there. What's also out there at the moment are a certain number of new loan schemes that the government has launched.
Okay.
One is available through Microfinance Ireland for smaller businesses. The Microfinance Ireland website has been updated recently with the terms and conditions of what is available and how small business owners can apply for the loans out there. And
by the way, sorry Sven for interrupting you. When you say small business, does that include, say, a sole trader who's an electrician or a plumber or whatever?
The Microfinance Ireland scheme is targeted at businesses with less than 10 employees. Okay. So that's out there. So then the SBCI loan scheme, the Strategic Banking Corporation of Ireland loan scheme, it currently stands at 200 million euros, and they're currently drafting up the terms for this. So this has been fully published yet, but this is what is out there. What also is practical, and you're probably going to say this has been available for small businesses in pre-crisis times as well, for small businesses to talk to the commercial rates office in the rates district they're in and say, listen, guys, I'm actually unable to pay this now. We just need to defer this, or we need to put this on the long finger. So this is to answer the question, what is currently out there.
And what about, and I'm sorry to rush you because I have very little time, but what about, say, for example, businesses who operate in cities where there's high rates? Are the local councils going to be, you know, wavering rates, say, for a period of time, as they are currently discussing in Northern Ireland and the UK? Are they going to say, well, look, you know, you can hold off on paying your rates just, you know, in these unprecedented times for maybe, you know, a 2 month period? Is there anything in the pipeline for that?
So now we're talking about what government should be doing. And first of all, government should be doing everything they can to really reduce the cost burden for small business. This includes commercial rates. This includes rent payments to state bodies. This should look at electricity bills, any utilities bills. If there can be a holiday, then there should be talk around what the revenue can do, not only in terms of deferred payments, but waiving payments for a period of time. But you're also then looking at the general rescue package. Is 200 million euros enough? As I just mentioned, it most certainly isn't.
No, we really
need to look at measures. If you look at certain states are looking at measures that equal 5% of the GDP, in Ireland, we're not even at 1%, so we'll certainly have to up again for that.
Yeah, well, I heard Trump this morning talking about it. So far, his first phase was $1 trillion he's going to put into business and industry in the United States, which is a far cry from what we're even thinking about at the moment. But understandably, we're a much smaller country. But listen, I wish all your members well, and I am rooting for every single one even. I know everybody's behind me when we say that, because, of course, we all rely on small business in this country, not just the PAYE sector, who have been damaged very badly too, but we're rooting for your small business, Sven, and I wish you luck, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again, all right?
No, thank you so much. Really, we appreciate that.
Okay, there you go. Sven Spolin Beren, who is the director of a Small Firms Association. By the way, I want to take one or two of your calls after the break. How are you getting on? How are you feeling? Are you anxious? Are you feeling down? Can we cheer you up in some way? Did you have a good day yesterday for St. Paddy's Day? Maybe you did something nice. Maybe something nice happened yesterday and you'd like to tell us about it and cheer us all up. Put a bit of a smile on our face. Let us know. The number is 087-188-0008. Or indeed, if you're in a small business and you have any questions, or maybe you've lost your job and you want to talk about that, let us know. The number is 087-188-0008. You can WhatsApp or text or send us an audio message. As usual, we'd like to hear your calls and your texts as well. It's important that we hear what you have to say about it. Of course, we want to try and give you as much information. That's why, unfortunately, we don't get as many callers on the air over the last few days, because it's important that we get the right information, because that's what everybody wants at the moment. We're all absorbing a lot of information. I know it's a lot for people to take in. I understand that, okay? I want to go to Joey Sheehan, who's head of credit at mortgages.ie. Good afternoon to Joey.
Good afternoon, Niall. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, something people are very worried about at the moment. You know, we've just gone from having the lowest unemployment rate in history to probably heading towards the highest unemployment rate in history, because a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. A lot of those people have mortgages. What's the first step? Now, of course, Pascal O'Donoghue is going to be talking about this later on, because he's meeting the banks today with a view to getting a moratorium for people. But what should people do in the interim?
Yeah, so obviously, Niall, you know, the whole world, I suppose, and the whole of Ireland has been hit in the last week with, you know, huge, obviously, the outbreak of this virus, the health risks and all of that is catastrophic. And, you know, we all need to follow the HSE's advice and heed all of that. That's the obvious issue here. But the fallout from all of that is what's happening to, you know, the people on the street, the workers. the Joe blogs in the street, like friends of mine, people I know, have been let go in the last week, and it looks like there's been, you know, maybe 140,000 let go in the last week, hopefully on a temporary basis. There will be more people, that there's no doubt of that. But what I would say is that,
just interrupt you there, Joey. You know, if you were you know, married and say a sole earner in the house, and you've got two kids or something like that, €203 from the state is not going to cut it, is it?
Yeah, well, it may be slightly higher for a family and with dependents and that, but absolutely. So people's income is going to be cut basically in a very short period to a fraction of what it was. And I suppose, you know, just to take some comfort out of this, Niall, there is a lot of people in this boat together. You know, the whole country is going to be affected. You know, we will stick together. We will get through this as a people and
absolutely.
As a nation.
Of course,
and
so.
I'm sure, you know, we're all going to do this. But from a financial point of view, what people need to do is, you know, you'd see things on social media in terms of applying for the COVID payment. There are for people renting, there's the rental support for people with mortgages. The first thing you need to do is contact your lender immediately. People will be surprised how receptive their lenders will be in this unprecedented times. So lenders have supports in place for this type of a scenario. I suppose normally, in usual circumstances, they would have a lot less people looking for relief on mortgages due to unemployment or ill health or whatever the reason. But the first thing you do is contact your bank, explain your situation to them, that you've been made redundant or whatever the case may be. The bank generally will send you a form called a standard financial statement. It's up to you to complete that. Maybe give some supporting documents such as bank statements and things like that. You outline, you know, your household, you know, two parents, two kids, whatever the case may be.
Your bills, your outgoings.
Your incomings, your outgoings, what commitments you've got. Maybe you've got a car loan, maybe you've got a credit card, credit union loan, whatever the case may be. And the bank will look at your circumstances. And if you're a genuine case and you need relief, the banks, in ordinary circumstances, will give relief, and they will give a moratorium or an interest only or something like that for a period of time. With the meeting you refer to with Pascal Donoghue, and I know the banks are talking to the central bank, and there's a bigger discussion going on there that I'm not privy to, but I'm sure that, you know, the idea there is basically to fast track something along these lines for tens of thousands.
Of course, you know? Because when you're out of work and it suddenly happens, you might not have the time to be waiting for statements of means and all this to go ahead. I mean, you literally don't have the money, and you have to pay your other bills too. And hopefully, you know, the likes of your service providers, including electricity and gas and everything, will be equally as receptive to people's needs in this really tough time. But I suppose they can go to your site, mymortgages.ie, and you can get a bit of information there. What about just very quickly, say something like a car loan, which nowadays most of them are PCP. I know this is not your department, so to speak, but you reckon there's going to be problems there as well? I mean, can people equally get on to whoever it is, whatever finance company is organising the PCP? I'm sure they can do something on that.
Well, absolutely. All creditors will treat people the same here. So what you need to do is, if you've got a mortgage, a credit card, a car loan, a PCP agreement, whatever it is, finance for maybe furniture, you need to contact all of your creditors, explain your situation to them, explain that you're looking for some sort of relief, hopefully on a temporary basis, and all of these will have to work with people. So it's a matter as well, Niall, what's important is that people prioritise what they are paying and what they can pay, and just to do their best and to be seen to be doing their best. Like, for example, you know, I remember the last recession, you'd often meet somebody that maybe they hadn't paid their mortgage for 6 months, but they're, you know, some other loan, which may not be as important in keeping a roof over their head, could have been fully up to date. So you need to, you know, talk to people, get advice. Citizens' information is there in terms of the processes. But certainly in regard to the mortgage, contact your lender immediately. Let them know your situation, and they will be there to assist you.
Okay, for those people, by the way, looking for that information, we will be talking to Citizens Information on the show tomorrow just after 12 o'clock as well. Listen, Joey Sheehan, who is the head of credit at mymortgages.ie. Thanks for coming on the air, and I appreciate the information.
Mate.
All right, on a lighter note, Niamh, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Niamh?
Hi, Niamh. How are you?
Good, nice to talk to you, Niamh, in these difficult times. But I mean,
you too.
Yeah, I mean, but your 10-year-old, what did he say? What did he say to you?
He came down this morning and he said, "What can I do to help?"
Ah, oh.
But
Isn't that really? I mean, what worries me, and Helena said this to me earlier on too about little people and, you know, and what they know, you know, and it worries me that, because I'd hate to think the little kids are anxious because mommy and daddy are worried. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you see, I've kind of been really careful with him because he's an anxious kid in normal times.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The sky's going to fall in. He's chicken little.
Right.
So kind of been careful with him. But what I did was, obviously he didn't watch the entirety of Rucker's speech because he'd be in John of God's right now.
Oh, okay. Right. So he takes things very seriously. So
very seriously. So I showed him the little clip. I said, do you know who Leo Varadkar is? And he didn't. So I explained that first off. And then I showed him the little clip that Leo basically spoke to the children.
How do you explain Leo Varadkar to a 10-year-old? Do you say he's our Donald Trump? Is that what you say?
No, I just said he's in charge of the country right now.
Oh, right, okay.
Pretty basically.
Okay. He's the boss. Okay.
Yeah, he thought he was the president. So I said, right, yeah, that's
same thing. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That'll do.
Yeah.
So he saw that, and then he came down. So he said, what can I do to help? And I was so full of pride and everything. I said, God, you're a great little boy, and thank you so much. And I thought, Mammy of the Year, I've brought him up so well, and I'm wonderful. And then he said, well, I better. He said, Leo told me to. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's right, because he did say to all the young people out there to have an understanding of your parents. Yeah, it's a help. So, by the way,
thanks, Leo. I got the hoovering done, so.
And how are you, Niamh? I mean, your partner I know works in the city in Dublin, because you told us before. Mm. I mean, how is his job? Is it looking safe? I mean, is everything okay there?
Not really. I think we're on a day-to-day basis. Okay. They depend. They're in a chain, so they depend on other people. They have to go in places to do installations and stuff. So if they're told you can't come in, well then,
yeah,
if they're stop. Place,
yeah, if the business, and this is the knock-on effect. When people talk about the bars and restaurants, it's not just the bars and restaurants. People have to supply bars and restaurants. Mm. Workers have to go in and, you know, fix the plumbing in a bar and restaurant. And they, you know, there's a knock-on effect, a massive knock-on effect for everybody.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Are you worried?
Not to panic. I had a little cry at Leo's speech, not because it was bad, but just because it kind of got to me.
Right. The seriousness of the whole thing, I suppose.
When he talked, do you know, it was that one line when he said, ring your family, tell them that you will see them again soon. I was like, oh, that's it, that was gone. That was enough for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm far away from my parents, can't go and see them, they're very elderly, they're fine.
That's, you know, and I watched the clip yesterday on RT News of the kids having the little parade in the kitchen. And the grandparents were outside the glass door waving in at them. And I'm going, oh, my God, this is terrible.
It's awful. Yeah. And it's like grandparents, you know, they just want to hug their grandkids.
Of course they
do.
Know,
and now my parents are worried about us. I keep saying, don't worry about us, we're fine. But their parents, they're my parents. So they worry about me like I worry about my kids.
Yeah, and you've two people to worry about. You've your kids to worry about and your grandparents.
Yeah. I'm not worried about them. I mean, they're sensible. Thank God. I mean, they're very elderly. They hate me saying that, but they are. But they're strong, thank God, and they're mentally strong.
Yeah.
You know, so this isn't getting to them. I mean, Dad brought in something from the garden the other day. Mum asked him what he was doing, and he said, I'm working from home.
Right.
You know, he's 91. You know.
Right, I'm working from home.
He's not working from home. I think he brought in something to fix.
He's 91, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's only a young man.
He's 91 in October. Yeah,
yeah. Well, look, I think for elderly people generally, and I think most elderly people are aware, even before we had this, to be very conscious, you know, around flu season and stuff like that as well. So they are very conscious of all those kind of things, because, of course, you know, even the ordinary flu can be quite dangerous for an elderly person to get. But when, of course, this is obviously a little bit more dangerous. But in saying that, we still always have to remember that the majority of people will get through this, even elderly people, by the way. Can I point that out to everybody?
You know, kind of feel sorry for them though, because they're constantly being mentioned. It must be awful.
I know, yeah.
Like, we'll all be grand now, except for the elderly.
And, yeah.
And the poor elderly are watching this going, please.
I know, and so I want to say that to all the elderly people listening, even if you are 70 or 80 years of age, if you did get this, most likely you'd be fine as well. Yeah. It just, so unfortunately, there's a higher percentage of elderly people that aren't fine. But listen, Niamh, it was lovely talking to you. That was a nice story to hear that your 10-year-old wanted to help because Leo told him to. After the break, by the way, there are some people out there who are more vulnerable than others, and they want to get the message across about social distancing. Everybody knows the rules at this stage, but I hope you all do, about washing your hands, social distancing, unnecessary, you know, parties, or, you know, if you have a wedding, or your 18th birthday party or whatever, they all have to be cancelled just for the moment, large groups of people together. And there's a reason for that, of course, isn't it? I mean, it's not because most of us are at risk, because most of us are not at risk. The majority of this population won't be at risk, but some people are. Ash Spillane, who has cystic fibrosis, wants to talk about the importance of that social distancing. And Ash, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Ranaid. How are you keeping?
Ash, 27 years of age. And how are you feeling generally, in okay health, apart from the fact that obviously you have cystic fibrosis, but how are you feeling generally? Are you coping well with it?
Yeah, no, I'm doing well, trying to keep busy regarding the whole situation, you know. As I was saying, there's always plenty to do at the house, you know, to keep yourself busy.
So are you, well, obviously you're more conscious of, you know, self-isolation and social distancing than anybody else, but you have to get out every now and again to do certain things, I suppose, and this is what worries you.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky in the sense, you know, obviously I'm going out for walks and stuff like that because exercise is a very important part of the CF regimen. But my mom is going out of the house if I need anything from the shops and stuff like that. So I am essentially just walks, that's about it. But anything else, I'm staying at home.
And then what's the danger of, I suppose, cross-contamination in some way, that if your mom is going out to get your stuff and unfortunately she could pick it up and not even know she's picked it up and then coming back to you, this is the danger. And even though you're not, you know, really interacting with people, your messages to other people that your mum is out there and she has to come back to you, I suppose.
Yeah, she's being very vigilant, obviously, going out. She has the hand sanitizer and the death wipes with her. And she's only going out when it's 100% necessary. Even ourselves now, for next week, we actually have our shopping. It's going to be delivered by Tesco.
Okay.
You know, we're just trying to take every precautionary measure we can. But at the moment, she's going out. She has her hand sanitizer. She has the death wipes. She's very quick in and out the shop and obviously washing her hands. She takes off her jacket and everything that she was wearing and puts it away. You know, she doesn't have it around the house when she's coming back in.
Yeah, so I mean...
It's all about keeping the risk.
Of course, because the risk to you is huge, because even a common cold or flu is devastating to you, but something like this would be even more devastating, obviously.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, for obviously anyone probably with an underlying illness, you know, I suppose isolation and keeping ourselves away from people who are sick is nothing new to us, essentially. But obviously, the risk of us is a lot greater regarding COVID-19.
Of course, because of the SARS element of it and the respiratory element of it as well.
Exactly.
And from your observation and what you're seeing around you on TV and out and about when you're doing your walk, are people generally being, I suppose, obedient is a good word to use, to the suggestion by government, you know, that you stay keep your distance, don't shake hands, don't hug or kiss anybody, and don't stay too close to people? Do you think people are being observant of that?
I think a lot of people are. We have to commend those people and fair play to them to actually, you know, adhering to the guidelines. But you still have that small percentage that aren't.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're the people we're trying to reach right now regarding this.
And the message you want to get to them is it's not about you as such, because realistically, if you're 30 years of age, or actually as they found out in Korea in the stats, people between the age of 20 and 29 who had it didn't even know they had it when they tested them, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people won't even know they have mild symptoms, particularly younger people, and they kind of carry on with life as normal and they think, sure, I'm grand. But what you're saying is don't be thinking about yourself, think about who you might spread it to and they might not be grand.
That's it. That's the most important thing, I suppose, trying to get across is, you know, think about who's in your life, who's in your circles. And, you know, you might necessarily have anyone in your immediate family who might be sick, but you might have a friend whose parents or they could have a grandparent. And it's all that chain of passing on that I suppose is what we're concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I wish you well, and I wish everybody who's in a very vulnerable situation, and we've spoken in the past to many people with cystic fibrosis, and obviously there's always that concern about illness, generally speaking, be it even the flu or something like that, but this must be a very difficult time for everybody who has an underlying condition, who has to kind of self-isolate, and I suppose just keeping yourself busy at home. Ash, how's that been?
It's going okay. Like, I'm generally, what I'm doing is every night I'm writing out a list of stuff I can do the next day, just
right.
Very small tasks, you know, like, even yesterday, I was like, put on 3 washes just so, you know, get my clothes kind of.
Yeah,
you know,
there's only so much. There's only so much Netflix one person can look at, really, isn't there?
That's it. Yeah. Like, surprised enough, even though I have Netflix, I'm not really a Netflix person. So, I'm just trying to be productive in other ways. Like I said, you know, for anyone, you know, it's like even just a, you know, like in times like this, it's very easy to stay in bed late, you know, not get dressed, and.
Yep.
like watch Netflix all day, but like you said, there's only so much of that you can do before you start getting sick of it, and your mind almost turns to mush, I think, when you're constantly staring at the TV all day as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, thank you very much. It's a point very well raised, and it's to everybody out there, think of people like Ash and many other people, particularly our elderly as well, who'd be in a difficult situation when it comes to this. And maybe, you know, they are self-isolating at the moment, but they will always have to have some sort of contact with other people who may not have been self-isolating.
So, yeah. It's just, I think the main thing about it is, you know, like, obviously, like, there's still people going to work and using public transport. It's just about being smart about it. And in those situations, maximising your social distance as you can, as much as you can.
Okay.
You know, that's what I would say to people in those situations, you know, it's just like, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, to think of people like yourself in the back of their mind and not just themselves. And I don't mean that in a selfish way, that they're thinking of themselves. But most people think, sure, I'll be fine if I get it. But it's to think of you who may not be fine if you get it. That's the point you're trying to make, of course.
That's it, yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, thank you very much, Lydia, and I wish you well. Ash Spillane, who has cystic fibrosis, and talking about the importance of social distancing. By the way, just before we get to the break, loads and loads of bad news, of course, all around the world, and not just Ireland. But the good news today, somebody pointed out, is that diesel prices are at the lowest they've ever been. Somebody just sent me a photograph there in County Clare, where diesel is 1.17 a litre. Yes, of course, because crude oil prices have plummeted. If there was anything good at all come out of it, that's the only thing that's good come out of it. And I noticed it myself when I filled up my car the other day that it cost me €10 less to fill it up. I think everybody's noticed that. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number is 087-188-0008. Want to hear your experiences. So many people, so many questions, because everybody has their own individual situation that we all want to know the answer to. By the way, somebody mentions, well, Niall, why doesn't the news announce how many people have gotten over it? The original cases diagnosed would be out of isolation by now. How come they don't report it? If the well-being or not, all there being some new cases and deaths, right? Oh, in other words, if they're talking about new cases and deaths, why don't they tell us about the people who are well again? Well, I think we can make an assumption that the first people who got it, and sadly only two people passed away, well, that's good news and it's bad news for obviously those people, and commiserations to the people who passed away and their families. And both of those, by the way, those two deaths that we had underlying conditions. But I think it's important to mention, yes, that the people who got it initially at the start, you remember the ones that went off on the skiing trips to Northern Italy, I'm assuming they're all out of isolation now at this stage and they're well again. I think it's an assumption that we must make that the majority of people, and let's be clear, we have to say this once again because it's a very positive thing to think about through these very tough times, is that the majority of people, you know, 98 or 99.9% of people probably, there's different statistics around the world, okay? If you look at Korea, for example, it's a low mortality rate. Italy has a higher mortality rate. And let's be clear, why Italy has a higher mortality rate is because they have a very old population. So it tends to be elderly people or those with underlying conditions. So when we look at the mortality rates around the world, yeah, the majority of the vast majority of people, even those who are elderly, will be fine, will be okay. You'll get a really bad cold, maybe some of you, or some of you'll get very mild symptoms. And then there's some of you as well, mainly between the age group, as they pointed out in Korea and the stats that they have, between the ages of 20 and 30 years of age, who won't even know they have it. So that's, you know, how you think about it, okay? The majority will be absolutely fine. Now, of course, if you do get symptoms, the first place you're going to turn to try and relieve some of those symptoms is your local pharmacy. And Laura Dowling is from the from Lloyd's Pharmacy. Good afternoon to you, Laura.
Hello, how are you?
Laura, I'm assuming it's a silly question for me to ask, but you're out the door at the moment, I imagine.
We are. We're very, very busy at the moment in all our pharmacies nationwide.
Okay. And the whole idea today is we want to, I suppose, have people have the understanding that there's no need to panic. There's plenty of supplies of the regular drugs people would have been getting before for whatever illnesses they may have had or prescriptions they would have had before. And all the stuff that's needed is there. There's no need to panic.
Absolutely. We are trying to reassure our patients and our customers that there is no need to stockpile meds. There is plenty of supply of medicines nationwide, all throughout Ireland. So there's no need to stockpile. And we're trying to manage a situation where we always have medicines for everyone that needs them. So we are only giving out a month's supply of medicines. And this has been, you know, this has been the limit that is imposed on us by the regulatory bodies as well. But I fully agree with it, because if people do start to stockpile, it means that some people will be left without.
Yeah, because people do, I mean, in times like this, you know, anxiety kicks in, people start to panic, you know, and then they start noticing illnesses which they may not have noticed before. I mean, we get a little bit of a cold and all of a sudden, where we would have just dealt with it before and kind of left it for a couple of days before we visited Lloyd's to get, you know, some medication, we would have ignored it before. Now we're kind of panicking a little bit. So I imagine things like paracetamol are in big demand.
They are. Paracetamol and ibuprofen have been in big demand.
Oh, by the way, sorry to interrupt you, but in relation to the ibuprofen, there's mixed stories about ibuprofen at the moment and myths online and stuff like that. So let's just alleviate that very quickly if we can. It is safe to take ibuprofen, isn't it, if you have a temperature?
There is no data that suggests that it isn't safe. And in actual fact, the European Medicines Authority have come out today with a statement to say just that.
Okay.
And our HSE website is... full of information and full of up-to-date information that it updates daily, if more than once a day.
Okay.
And it has come out and said that ibuprofen is to be considered to be used, if necessary, in order to reduce fever and aches and pains associated with food.
Let's all stop ignore these WhatsApp messages with these stories.
Oh, listen, if I could just get the message out to ignore the WhatsApp messages and to ignore the social media as well that surrounds it, that isn't by, you know, people in the medical field, then we'd all be a lot happier, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm assuming there is a little bit of a backlog, you know, when you're going in to get your prescription, where normally you might have had to wait, you'd be standing in Lloyd's tapping your foot for 10 minutes. You might be waiting 20 minutes or half an hour now because a lot of people obviously want to get their meds and stuff like that. So there is. So I suppose the word out there is just be patient, I imagine.
Well, I think so. And certainly with Lloyd's Pharmacy, we are, all our pharmacies, 91 of them nationwide, remain open and operational. And our primary concern is that we serve our patients and our communities. So we've put in place a number of protocols just to ensure that everyone gets looked after and in a safe manner. So just in terms of people coming for their prescriptions, we're asking them to phone ahead if there are repeat prescriptions so we can get it all ready for them and hand it to them. As soon as they come in for it, rather than them waiting in store. We are limiting the amount of people that we are allowing in the store at any one time, and that's just in order to
keep the social distancing.
Keep in time with the social distancing as advised by the HSE. We are also asking people to maybe, if they are coming with a prescription that they've just received, that we take it from them at the door, they wait in the car for it, and then we'll either phone them when it's ready or we'll give them an approximate time, say 10, 15 minutes, that it will be ready and they can come and collect it then, to avoid the numbers of people that are in our store. We're also advising people to pay with contactless where possible.
Yep.
For the whole hygiene reasons.
Of course, they'll be handling money, of course, yeah.
Exactly. And then obviously it's very important that people, if they are experiencing symptoms of COVID-19, I'm sure everyone is aware of them, but maybe I'll just remind everyone, it's a cough, a shortness of breath, maybe some difficulty breathing and a fever, that they don't come into the pharmacy with those symptoms, that they phone the HSE helpline, which is 1850 24 1850, or their GP and get the appropriate advice.
Because there is a lot of confusion around this, because, you know, people would have normally come into you guys with a cough or a cold anyway. And let's be clear about it, you can still get a cough, you can still get a cold, and you can still get the flu. It doesn't necessarily mean you have COVID-19. So,
absolutely.
But if you do have those symptoms, obviously because of the confusion and the concerns around our elderly at the moment and not spreading it on to other people, you know, ring the GP first. Don't wander into Lloyd's while you're coughing and sneezing with your tissue in your hand.
Yes, exactly. I just think that it's just for everyone, for our colleagues in store, and then for everyone that you might be come in contact with on your journey to the pharmacy as well, it's really important. And it's worthwhile noting too that the GP surgeries are also saying don't just turn up with these symptoms either. They're supposed to be phoned in, and the GP will assess you first and foremost over the phone and tell you whether or not they need to see you for a respiratory check or whether you should, or whether they need to order a COVID-19 test for you either. So, and then you certainly don't turn up to the hospital with it either, you know, without phoning ahead. It's just to make sure that everyone is safe as possible, certainly our frontline workers.
And of course, you mentioned the COVID-19 test. We're getting news in all the time and updates, and I'm sure you probably get them more than we do in relation to, I know there's an Irish company at the moment who believe they have a test that will test people within 15 minutes, and fair play to them, it's an Irish company, which is great. And that test should be widely available very, very soon. And there's been other companies in America producing tests, similar type of tests. This will all, of course, help if we can all identify ourselves. And if we have a home test, wouldn't that be great, that we can all identify if we have it, and then we can self-isolate to protect others. Is there any news on that, or any news, say, for example, on, as we had with the swine flu, we had Tamiflu came out about 3 months after the swine flu, which helped alleviate the symptoms of the swine flu. Is there any news on any of that coming soon?
So I think that, you know, there's scientists working tirelessly around the world for a remedy for this flu. There are certainly a number of drugs being trialled for it, and a number of drugs have shown to alleviate symptoms of anything. But we don't have the answer just yet in terms of the drug that works or the vaccine that's going to be made either. And then in terms of the home testing kits, I think they're a bit of a while off too. We're going with the testing kits that are being provided by the HSE. There are 30,000 due to drop in the next couple of days, I think, and then we're just going to follow the protocol there. And as and when things change, and if the HSE approves home testing, then that will certainly be a help. But until they approve it, then we're only going with the guidelines that they're suggesting too. And certainly in Lloyd's Pharmacy, we would always go by the HSE guidelines wherever. Whenever possible.
All right. So the message is, I know you represent your own shop there in Blanchardstown, but also, should I say, but you also represent all the branches of Lloyd's Pharmacy as well. The main message is, don't panic. We have your meds. And even this, we're talking about meds, of course, that people would have been taking regularly before all this came along. There's going to be no shortage. You don't need to stock up on 6 months supply of it or anything like that. So just do things as you normally would have done them.
Exactly. And just follow the protocols that we all have had told to us numerous times now, with our correct hand washing, our cough and sneeze etiquette, and our social distancing. And if we can all do that, and I know it's very difficult. I have three children myself that I'm keeping from my parents, and everyone's finding it very difficult. But I think if we all do that, we're going to keep ourselves safe, our people that are more vulnerable safe, and then we're also going to prevent our hospitals from becoming overwhelmed with this virus, so they can look after everyone, and that our healthcare workers in there on the ground can look after people safely and carefully and healthily, and hopefully we'll all come out of this a bit more cognizant of the way we deal with things.
All right. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed. And thank you to everybody, by the way, who works not just in the caring industry and in the hospitals, but people who work in the pharmacies who are also on the front line as well. I appreciate it. All right. Thank you very much indeed, Laura. All right. Let me just go, if I can, to Vera Toomey. Now, Vera, you might remember, has been on the air with us many times over the last few years. Of course, she walked from her native Cork all the way to Dublin to get the laws changed around her daughter, Ava, who suffers very greatly with having seizures. And of course, the reason she was doing that was to get legalised medicinal cannabis. And she joins me on the air because she has her own concerns now at the moment. Vera, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Lovely to talk to you again, Vera. Just when we thought you were okay and everything was all right, you're very upset because you can't get the meds for your daughter now.
I just heard that lady speaking there on the phone, you know, on the radio and your programme. And excuse me, I just rang because that isn't what's happening in my life here at the moment at all. And
okay.
There's more than nearly up to 30 other families in the country that are in exactly the same situation that we're in now.
Okay. So explain the situation when we talk about medicinal cannabis. And
yep.
Okay, so, you know, you do have permission to get it legally. You can get it legally. Obviously, that's all changed since the last time we spoke to you. But the problem is actually getting it.
We have an individual license to access medical grade cannabis for our daughter under prescription for her intractable epilepsy, for her seizures.
Okay.
And excuse me, we have been travelling to Holland every 12 weeks for the last 2 years now. It's been that long.
Okay.
To get Ava's medication over in Den Haag in the Netherlands, the prescription is over there, and we must collect it and bring it home ourselves.
Okay, so the law legally states that you have a license to be in possession of it, right? But unfortunately, nobody is going to supply it to you over here. And why, can you explain to us, Vera, why that is? Why you can't actually get the supply over here? Or why it can't be imported for you, say, by a pharmacy or by a doctor?
I can, of course, yeah. The problem with the injection, they said to us, Dutch side, they said that the HSE, I beg your pardon, said that the Dutch were not in a position to export the oil out of the country. Oddly, they can export the cannabis bud or the flower, but not the oil.
Okay.
So that was why we had to travel to get it ourselves.
Okay, so essentially, so, this is cannabis resin, I suppose, more so than an oil. Yes,
they seem to be able to export the resin, yeah. I believe, but okay. not the oil. Medication, which oh, okay. is an oil. Okay,
so that was all well and good, and although it was a huge inconvenience for you, the problem is now is
you did it anyway. Yeah,
yeah. The problem is now is you can't travel to this country to get it.
Well, you see, our daughter, and you know, I would suggest that. A lot of the people that have prescriptions for medical cannabis, their immune systems would be compromised.
Yes,
so
of course.
In our own personal experience, our daughter's immune system is extremely compromised. And she would be a person that would be extremely vulnerable to the coronavirus.
Yep.
So if I travelled over to get the medication for her, then I will be taking the flight from Cork to Schiphol, the train from Schiphol down to Den Haag, the tram over to the pharmacy and back again. So there's 500 cases of coronavirus at the last count that I was made aware of in Holland. I would be exposed to it.
And the last thing you want to do is interact with thousands and thousands of people just to get this medication when there should be an easier way for you to access it.
And just regarding the easier access to it, okay, the patients over in England who are using the Bedrocan medication that Ava is on, the Home Office in England organised it for those families that there was a distributor sent to Holland to collect it on their behalf, and that distributor brought it back to England, and it was dispensed via their pharmacies in England and Northern Ireland, but the HSE never did that for us. So we're stranded here now. I can't go for the medication for the child, and if I don't have the medication, her seizure control...
I know, because you spoke to us before about how many seizures she was having versus how many she was down to because of the medicinal cannabis that you were giving her. Obviously, it reduced. Yeah. And obviously, every seizure is a risk to her life, a huge risk to her life.
It is a huge risk, and it can set back the amounts of progress that you're after making very quickly, you know. Mm-hmm. If you had a cluster of 10 seizures, it could knock out 3 months of effort or work or progress just in a flash.
Okay. And how has she been since the last time we spoke to you? How has she been? Is she a lot better? Because obviously you've been getting the medicinal cannabis up to now.
She's been so happy. She's been good. I mean, she's prone to infections as a general rule, and there have been ups and downs. We've missed some school and so forth. But, I mean, overall, she's nearly been in school every day.
That's great. Yeah. So she was back to some level of normality. But now you find yourself in a situation where not only does she have to self-isolate anyway, which would be the logical thing to do, but now you're self-isolating because obviously you're a risk to her, and you have no way of getting over to Schiphol to get this medication.
I'm very afraid. And there are plenty other women like me out there with children and men too, patients that are frantic over this.
And have you talked to the HSE in relation what they're doing in the UK for people you? And what have they said to you?
I tried the HSE number. I couldn't get through on the HSE number. I emailed them. I haven't even got a response. From the HSE. And look at, we were years dealing with them.
And you feel you've just been forgotten about now in the middle of all this.
And they were never helpful at the best of times, you know. But I suppose you carry on and you keep hoping that there'll be some event or something that they will actually come out and help you, and they just aren't.
And I can hear in your voice how upset you are, and I know this is really upsetting for you because you thought you'd passed all this. You thought, I mean, you walked from Cork to Dublin, for God's sake, and you nearly killed yourself in the process of doing that. And you did all this for your daughter, and rightly so, any mother would do this for a daughter. And now you're in a situation where you've done everything you can, and now another hurdle has been put in front of you.
Well, you'd never think that there could be anything more dangerous than the level of seizures that the child was having, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is more dangerous. And I wouldn't want my worst enemy to be in the situation that we're in here. We can't go for it because it's too dangerous to go for her. But if we stay at home and do nothing, the consequences of her not having her medication will be catastrophic. I can't express how dangerous it is.
Well, coming
out on the radio suggesting that there's plenty of medication for everybody. There might be paracetamol, and there might be enough Calpol and Nurofen to keep us going. But we're sitting here, people that are forced out of our own country in the first place, like why we shouldn't be, to get this medication. And now, in an international crisis, they don't even reply to an email. We're very afraid. I have contacted all the politicians I can, and you're
coming against a brick wall again.
I tried Simon Harris. He never answers the phone. I tried Simon Coveney. He actually did answer the phone. He said he was going to go away and look at it. He didn't know what the answer was. Haven't heard back from him as of yet. So if he's listening, get back on to me and let me know what you're going to do about it, please. I've had Micheál Martin on, and Micheál Martin is actually doing everything he possibly can to help us, but he can't do it on his own.
And just to mention, by the way, there's many other people in your situation. And by the way, somebody's just texted in, they've WhatsApped in, actually, and it's a foreign number. I don't know. I'm not too sure where that's from. It looks like it's American, actually. And it says, Niall, if that lady online, Ree Cannabis Oils, needs help, I can help her. It is legal where I come from, obviously, medicinal cannabis. And he says, I can mail it over to her. I understand.
He says, I
understand it's illegal in Ireland. However, if she needs it, you can send her my info.
I know, and I appreciate that. And look, I put out a post about Ava's situation up on Facebook, and the response to it has been unbelievable. The kindness, the amount of people that have contacted and offered to travel over for us on her behalf, and so much like that. It's not as straightforward. Our name must be on the license.
Oh, I get what you mean. Yeah. Otherwise, the transaction is technically illegal, and that person may put them. By the way, the person just wafted that back in. They said they're actually in Canada. So obviously, whatever part of Canada he's in or in Canada, medicinal cannabis is legal.
But he would be putting himself at risk, I would think, by sending something over into a jurisdiction where it's illegal.
Mm-hmm. Although you do have a license, but your name would have to be on it. I know, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, I wish you well, Vera, and, you know, and I want you to keep in touch with us and let us know how you get on. Obviously, you know, people are listening today, and maybe Simon Coveney or Micheál Martin, and I know you've spoken to them already, and maybe I know they have a lot on their mind at the moment, and I'm not giving them excuses.
I know they have a lot on their plate, and the thing was that you've no idea. Kind of when I put that post up on Facebook, I never thought there'd be so much of a response to it, because you know why? Everybody's so worried about their families and their parents and their grandparents and everything that but people have been very kind, and they see that Ava just needs help, as do all the other people.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's not a big deal, and there may be issues that can't be resolved, you know, but this is actually a very straightforward issue to resolve. We just need them to send a distributor to collect our medication and bring it home, you know.
Okay, and of course it's a life or death situation for you, and I understand, well, for your daughter, and I understand that, and for many other people in that situation.
Yeah.
All right, listen, it's been lovely talking to you again, Vera, and I wish you well. And I wish you and your daughter a safe passage to this very uncharted territory that we're in.
Please, God, and the same to you. And thanks for talking to us. We appreciate it very much.
Okay, thanks, Vera. All right, well, there you go, Vera Toomey, who, as you all know, we've spoken to her many times on the air, particularly when she went through that whole dilemma trying to get the licence legislation through for herself and for her daughter, Ava, as a young girl who suffers from seizures, and any of those seizures could kill her at any stage. And obviously, as a mother, she's worried about her daughter now that she can't get out to get this medical medicinal cannabis. So indeed, Simon Harris and Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar and everybody else in the HSE who is involved, maybe you could do something similar to what they've done in the UK and nominate a distributor to actually get it for them, rather than putting them at risk, sending them to get it in Inchkipol. As she said, she has to go and get it and travel all the way over on planes and trains and buses and trams and put herself and her daughter at great risk. In relation to the NCT Centre, somebody sent in a question earlier on. The car is in for an NCT tomorrow. The NCT Centres are open. I can clarify that. We did have one guy who said he works in it. And there's something I want to mention. He says, oh, look, now we have to work on it. I don't know how comfortable I am about getting in and out of people's cars. You know, there's people out there working in shops, sitting at checkouts, and they have to serve people. I think you could go down a very deep rabbit hole if we start thinking about life like that. As a country and as a people, we have to get through this. And the only way we'll get through it is that some people are going to take more risks than others. And if you are older and you're working in an NCT centre or you're working in a shop, of course you talk to your employer about keeping your distance from customers. But if you are in the age bracket, which is probably not going to be too badly affected by this, I think you probably have to take the risk, because otherwise the country will come to a halt. Electricity, gas, diesel, suppliers of food, pharmaceuticals, all the caring industry, hospitals, all have to provide a service and put themselves in some level of risk for the rest of us. And I think if you are working in those industries, that's the job and that's part of it. And we all have to do it. We all have to play our part. And if playing your part means putting yourself at a little bit of risk when you're supplying food, when you're supplying goods or services, which are vital and are needed, I think we all have to pull together and do that. Now, of course, things will be easier if we all get tested, and test kits, 30,000 test kits will be arriving in Dublin tomorrow, according to Leo Varadkar in his statement. And the more people that get tested, the better it is for everybody, because then it gives us a better indication of how dangerous this actually is, and maybe not as dangerous as we thought, for example. Hopefully not. And the more people that get tested, the more people can self-isolate. Well, Stephanie Prisoner, and I hope I pronounced her name right, Prisoner, got tested in Crow Park yesterday, I believe. Stephanie, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Niall. I'm Prisoner.
Prisoner, there you go. I've just mispronounced your name and I really apologise for that.
I don't mind.
Stephanie, first of all, why did you believe you needed to get tested, or what was going on with you?
So last Friday I started to develop a cough and a kind of a sore throat, and I have, which I thought was from coughing, and I have asthma.
Okay.
So usually once a year I get a chest infection and I go to my doctor and I have to get antibiotics and the whole thing. So I was like, okay, this is probably this whole situation again, but I can't just go to the GP. So I rang my GP and said, hi, I have my cough and usual symptoms. And she said, have you travelled? And I said, I have. I was working in London 7 days ago.
Okay.
And she said, okay, and asked me other questions and then said, I'd actually like you to get tested because
you're in the risk category.
In the risk category with the asthma. So at that point she put me on a list, and then yesterday morning I had a call from the HSE. So that was Friday, and then yesterday morning I had a call from the HSE to say that I was going to be one of the first people down in the Crow Park new test centre.
I watched the video. Somebody sent me a video yesterday where it's underneath the stand. It's like the tunnel effect, and you drive through. So you drove up to
yes.
it. So what, your doctor, did your doctor have to give you a cert or something?
They do ask you not to take photographs or video. So
right, okay.
Just to tell you listeners that. You drive up to the gate and a man asks you your name. He has a list of all the names of people who are due during that hour.
Okay.
And then you are ushered on to the next phase. And it's kind of like boarding a ferry. Like it's one car behind the other.
Okay.
And there's three rows of that. And you're given an A4 page with instructions of how to turn off your engine, what not to do, what to do in the next bit, and you're handed a mask, which you're told to put on. And then when everyone gets that, you're ushered to the next phase, which is under the stand.
Okay.
And in there are 8 bays, and at each bay there are 2 medical staff who are wearing full gown, gloves,
protective, or PPs as they're called,
protective. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they usher you forward and tell you where to stop, and then one of them comes to the window and she takes your name and your details, asks your symptoms, your travel history, and she gives you 2 tissues, and she explains that the next person that's going to come to the window is going to swab your nose and the back of your throat with the same swab.
Okay.
And if you need to expel anything, you are to do so into the tissues that they give you and not into your hand or the face of the person swabbing you.
Right.
And then that person comes along and you roll down your window. She swabs your throat, which is, and your nose with the same swab.
It's a little bit uncomfortable, you know, I imagine. Yeah, it'd make you gag.
For like
yeah.
7 seconds. For right, like okay. 7 seconds.
Okay.
And then they give you a 6-page document about what has happened, what the next steps are, what you can expect, and how to protect yourself and others now that you are in social isolation, which you are asked to be in after until you get your results. And the results, I'm told, go back to the GP,
okay.
not to you directly. And,
okay. So
yes,
you very, how long do you have to? So when did you get it? What time was it yesterday you got it done?
12 o'clock, and I expect results. She said 3 to 4 days.
Oh, that's so a bit of a wait, isn't that, it?
We just heard that Ciara Kelly has been tested positive for
that's
it.
That's right.
She was
yeah,
tested on Sunday night, so that's kind of the time we're dealing with.
Okay, well, okay, so that's it is 3 days, really, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually heard that on the news there a few minutes ago. That Ciara Kelly from News Talk, who is a doctor herself, by the way.
Yeah.
Has tested positive as well, and so she's in self isolation at the moment. I don't know whether she's doing her show from home or what. I think she is. I think she is
from a hot press for the last few days. I think
from a hot press, right? Okay,
yeah,
all right.
It sounds.
But look, so are you concerned? Is it like waiting for your leaving cert results? I imagine it probably is, isn't it?
It's not really, but I certainly have. Like today, I do have a temperature. I definitely have an infection. So
you definitely have a cold of some description, yeah.
Yes. So if it's COVID-19, I need to stay in for the protection of others, and if it's not, I need to stay in for the protection of myself because I obviously have a depleted immune system because I'm sick with something at the moment. So I'm just sort of going on the basis that everyone has it and I'm keeping well away.
So on the assumption that it might be, do you feel any worse than you've ever felt before when you have a cold?
I don't. I see it's kind of like the symptoms of several colds all at once, you know? Like
yeah.
Sore throat. I don't usually get all of the things. But today I have a temperature and I have
a cough, which you just heard there a minute ago, yeah. Yeah.
But I don't have a very high fever and I don't have body aches and stuff. So I think the symptoms are kind of different for each person and this mightn't even be it at all, but I'll know on Friday.
Yeah, but look, you're holding out well anyway. And
yeah.
Most likely, I mean, you're in the age, well, I don't know your age, but I'm assuming that you're in the age category.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not on a high risk age category, although you do have the underlying symptom of asthma. Although I have heard mixed reports from different doctors about how vulnerable you will be in that situation with asthma. Many have said that it shouldn't affect it too much, but others have said that it will because obviously it's a respiratory infection or a respiratory yeah. problem. But look, I wish you well and I hope you're okay, Stephanie.
Thanks so much, Niall.
Yeah, and it sounds like you should be all right with this. You're probably going through the worst
yeah.
of it at the moment, I would imagine. And if this is the worst of it, sure, you'll be grand.
I will. I'll definitely survive. And I'm really glad to have things like radio and television to
yeah.
keep me company during this time. So thank you for continuing to go to work.
Oh, listen, Stephanie, thanks very much indeed. And thanks for coming on the air. I appreciate it. All right. Let me go to Sienna. Sienna, you're on Classic Kids. How are you doing, Sienna?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
You just wanted to come on the radio for a chat.
Yeah, I did. I'm burnt off now. I can't go outside my door.
Right. And, yes, and now you are a high risk because obviously you've had cancer treatment recently.
Yeah.
And you're not and you're not that young either, Sienna.
Pardon?
You're not that young.
No, I'm not. I was 60 and I couldn't do anything a few days ago.
I don't know. And by the way, how are you? Because I know you've had the cancer treatment. How are you feeling generally? You feeling okay?
I feel at stage 4 and I am okay.
Okay.
I'm just browned off.
Right. And your daughter, who is your lifeline, and I've met you a few times and she's always with you.
I'm broken hearted. I can't see her.
I know.
That's what's kidding me.
And you talk to her on the phone all the time?
Yeah, I have her driven mad.
I'm sure you haven't. I'm sure she's delighted to hear from you.
And, you know, I'm ringing her and here I am. Like, I'm waking up at 6 in the morning and, you know, here she is. Like, she doesn't live with me. Don't even think of ringing me at 6.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mandy, I know. Do you know what, now? It's not even the staying in business. Because where would I be going? You know what I mean? I wouldn't be going too far anyway.
Yeah.
But it's the not being able to go out your door. I can't go down on the lift to see if there's any post. If I, well, I can't, but I have to get on the lift. I have to nearly sterilise all the lifts. And it's not
and try not to touch anything, yeah, and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yes, you know. And...
And how are you getting your groceries? Is Mandy dropping them up to you?
She's dropping them up to the door.
Right, and then just knocking on the door and running away.
Knocking at the door and she's running away and I'm waving out to her.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
I can't cope. And the little fella and all the little... he calls me Blanche.
Right.
And here he is. I can't even see brunch.
Right. I know. I know. It's really tough. Great. It is tough, isn't it?
But you know what? There's people out there. I suppose there are. Well, there is people out there. But today, I don't know. This morning, I was very, very down.
I know, but you've always got to remember that, and you're right, there's always people worse off than yourself, and that's what you have to think of, isn't it?
People out the streets, you know, people just all going to be up to their eyes in debt, people that their family are dying and can't get to them.
Yeah, I know, and I know, because I've met you a couple of times during the listener parties and at book launches, you know, you've been there, and your daughter... You're mad as a brush, but I think she's even madder, to be honest with you. So
not really. No, she does.
She keeps you sane.
Yeah, she does. But she kind of, like, nothing would surprise her what I come out with.
Yeah, I know. Because you're a funny person, Sienna. You are a funny person.
But that's just natural. I'll tell you, when this is all over, I'm going to do stand-up comedy in Vicar Street. With me. Oxygen machines and nebulizers, and I tell you, Niall, I will do it.
I know you will. I'll be honest with you, I'd buy a ticket, Sienna. I'd buy a ticket.
You know what? You'd be guest of honour yourself and Gary Cunningham. Guest of honour, front seat row.
Yeah, I know. And
Mandy will even buy it.
Mandy will be our agent, for God's sake. Yes.
She will say no, Mandy. They just keep her there for as long as you can.
Yeah. I know. Well, look, give my regards to Mandy. I've met her a few times. She's lovely.
She said to me, oh, I do miss you. That may be worse.
I know. Of course she misses you, Sienna.
I know. But yeah. I'd be all right and everyone else.
Yeah, but you have us to listen to on the radio as well during the day.
I'd be lost without you. I would be lost. And I enjoy that chat now.
Yeah.
And please God, we will see each other soon.
We will. We will, and I hope at Gary's next book launch, because I'm sure he'll have another book. I'm sure I'll meet you again.
I was talking to him the other day, actually, and he's doing well. He's doing, you know, and I was going to say, do you want to drop up for a bit of coffee and a cup of tea? But I couldn't.
Yeah, I know. It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
But I'd be making the coffee. Yeah.
And do you FaceTime Mandy? Do you get her? Do you know how to use? Are you using FaceTime?
Oh, no, I'd rather just ring. No,
right, okay.
I would be able to talk then. I get all emotional.
Would you? All right, okay.
Even though I'm mad and all that, I'm a very emotional person.
I know. I'm sure you are.
You know what I mean?
But you are mad. You have clarified that you are a bit mad.
I'm telling you now, when I'm there, I'm up there in Dicker Street. You can know.
But for those people who don't hear you, by the way, for those who don't know you, and I know you're at stage, you have stage 4 cancer, and I know all that, and you know, and you're just happy. I know you're a happy person. You've been on the air at night talking about your sex life, and for that, so that's how mad you are.
I know. All right, but look,
keep the good side up, Sienna. Keep the happy side out. All right.
Yeah. I have to tell you this, right? Somebody put up on Facebook the other day, did you know when you're asleep at night, spiders go down your throat?
I know.
Testicles off your tonsils.
Right.
There I was. There's my look again. I could be asleep. I miss all this.
I know. But I tell you what we're going to do, Sienna. We're going to make sure at night, because we do, at night time, we're going to try and obviously stay away from the topic of the coronavirus, try and lighten people's moods. We will talk to you again on the nighttime show, and I'm sure you'll lighten up everybody's mood, and I hope you get to see Mandy very soon. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number is 087-188-0008. Somebody wants to know, is Sienna still looking for a man? Sienna's always looking for a man. There's another text coming in, by the way. Somebody says, Niall, I'm one of those small business owners in Cork that had to close. It's absolutely devastating, says Eileen. Yeah. Another person says, Niall, I've just heard an 86-year-old neighbour in Cork that some man in his 20s came to her door offering to sell COVID-19 testing kits. She was wise enough to send him away. Absolute scumbags, please warn your listeners. Absolute scumbags. If anybody calls to your door offering to sell you a test kit or a cure for COVID-19 or anything like it, please, please, please call the guards. Send them away and call the guards, because they're scum. There is no such kit and there is no such cure. All right, so please, please advise your parents, by the way, if your parents are at home, that if somebody's calling at the door offering to sell some sort of cures or kits, to send them away. Let me go to Valerie just before we finish the show today. Valerie, you're on Classic Kits. How are you doing, Valerie?
Oh, hi, Niall. How are you?
Now, you've had a devastating night, not because of COVID-19, but because of Fifi, your dog.
I did indeed. Yesterday morning at 10 to 12, we were attacked by a pit bull in our back garden, came in through our gate.
So you were in your house at the time?
I was, yes. I was in my house. I was mopping my floor. And as all mothers do. You're mopping your floor and you're making your way out the back door to keep the, get the floor dry. And the pit bull just came from nowhere. Well, came from the side entrance down the gable end, came around the back and jumped, got a hold of my dressing gown. And then my
So it went for you first?
Well, see, I was in the way of the door. Okay. My other dog was in front of me in the kitchen.
Right, okay.
So basically, I was in the way. The dog was coming through me. And then Fifi, of course, she came forward as well, barking and going, they were all going nuts. He grabbed her, put her into her mouth, and he started chewing her and wrapped her around like a rag doll.
Oh, my. Oh, my. And your dog, he's a little dog. It's a picture of him. Well, sadly, the pictures we've seen of him.
Jack Russell.
Little Jack Russell,
We fostered him first, and then he was fostered, and then he was adopted, and he's here, 13 years.
Yeah. And so he's probably 13 or 14 years old. He's not a young dog, no.
No. But she's good and healthy dog. You know, yeah, she's very well looked after.
Yeah.
So that's basically what happened.
So Fifi was, and I've seen the pictures, this dog basically locked its jaws on Fifi, threw her around like a rag doll, literally ripped her open.
Ripped her stomach open and took out her intestines and started chewing them.
Oh my.
And then went for her neck and ripped her neck.
And unfortunately for Fifi, she didn't make it.
No, she didn't.
No. And did she die immediately or did she die when you brought her to the vet?
No, she didn't. I had to put her in the car and bring her to the Raheny vet, which they were absolutely fantastic.
Okay, but it was too late. There was not a lot.
It was too late, yes.
Yeah. She lost a lot of blood, I'm sure, at that stage as well.
So much. And as well as that, I mean they couldn't put her testicles back together.
I know. That was absolutely shocking. And of course, her age probably didn't help either as well, the age she was at as well, you know. But this dog... It's in the neighbourhood. No, I don't want you to name the owner of the dog because
I will not. No.
Yeah, but the dog also attacked other people last year. The same dog.
Well, as the day progressed yesterday, we found out that the dog had attacked someone last year on the beach, and it took four men to take the dog off the person. And then we found out also that while our Fifi was in the vet getting the injections to be let down. It had attacked two other dogs before it attacked us, and another dog is dead as well.
And did you spoke to the Garda Síochán, I'm assuming?
Spoken to the Garda Síochán. I have spoken to the owner. I'm just waiting to hear. I've been on to the DSPCA as well. So.
And now let's be clear about this. And you're the first one to say this. Look, the dog obviously was quite vicious in doing this, but was on the rampage, right? But in saying that, this dog, I mean, a responsible owner having a dog like this, which is on the dangerous dogs list, should have had a muzzle on the dog.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I want to speak to you, because, I mean, we have a dog similar to that. My son has, and it really depends on the owner of how you're rearing the dog, you know. I know they have they can have a tendency to be vicious and stuff like that. But, I mean, these dogs, they need proper caring. They need to be on a leash. They need to be on a collar. They need to have their muzzle. This dog had nothing, absolutely nothing on it.
And I don't want you to name where the dog is from or where it came from. Did the dog have to run far to get to your house?
It would, yes.
Okay, so it was obviously on the loose.
Obviously, no, and it was missing, yeah, of course.
And would the owner of this dog, would the owner have let it off by accident, or do you think the owner just lets the dog ramble around?
Well, that hasn't been said yet.
Okay, all right, okay.
We're still waiting for that. The Garda Síochán will be dealing with that part.
All right, okay. And sadly, you know, the dog may have to be put down. Sleep, yeah.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, as I say, I think precautions should have been taken in last year. Apparently a terrier got attacked as well on the beach.
By the same dog, yeah.
By the same dog, so precautions should have been taken in at that time, but they weren't. Yeah. And I really...
If I remember rightly, actually, that particular story was on social media at the time about that
dog.
It was
indeed.
Yeah, because I think we spoke to the owner. I think we spoke to the person whose dog was attacked on the beach this time last year by the same dog.
Okay, I think so as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think we probably did because I remember that story had gone all over social media at the time in relation to that particular attack last year. Well, listen, all I can say is my condolences to you on the loss of Fifi. I mean, I'm sure she was a member of the family and I'm sure you're devastated. I know you didn't sleep last night.
No, I haven't slept a wink, actually.
Right, okay.
It's just a horrendous thing to see. You hear about these things, but when you're seeing it and you have no control, and my son was there and you're trying to get the dog and you're doing everything, you know, but the dog will not let go.
No. And it was lucky, you know, thankfully he only got a hold of your gown and he didn't get a hold of you.
Oh, thank God, yeah, I just got a hold of the dressing gown.
Yeah.
That was it.
Well, listen, thanks for raising the issue and I appreciate you coming on the air today, Valerie, and I'm really sorry
thanks
about the dog
Niall.
And I hope you can get through this.
I just wanted to raise your awareness of the importance of people using muzzles on certain particular dogs that need to be, you know, looked after and trained well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, listen, thank you very much indeed, Valerie. And that's a shocking, shocking story. And for anybody who has any of the dogs that are on the dangerous dog list, you do have an obligation legally that you must be over 16 if you're walking the dog. You must have them on a decent lead, and you also have to have a muzzle on them. And that's the very reason why. There she was at her own back garden, minding her own business. This dog comes belting through her gate, down the side of her house, attacks her and attacks her dog. And sadly, her dog is now dead. After 13 years of surviving, it's killed by another dog. And all because of an irresponsible owner. Not blaming the dog directly, but all because of an irresponsible owner who couldn't be bothered looking after the dog. Damien Farrelly is on the way. Hopefully he'll brighten up the afternoon for you. Put a smile on your face, because we all need a bit of a smile on our face, don't we? Because anxiety levels are through the ceiling. We're all trying to compartmentalise information. And the bad news, it almost seems surreal, doesn't it? It seems like some sort of Hollywood movie. That you would watch, and you think about, you watch the world through the eyes of a television screen. But today we're watching it through our own eyes, and we're watching what has happened, something that will go down in our history and something that we can tell everybody about as we get older. And we will all get older, don't worry. We'll all get through this, and we'll all get through it together.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.